When we finished last time, we were doing the Yontifs. Remember, we were in middle of Parshas Emor, and we were doing, I think it was Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and really we should finish Parshas Emor, but what we're going to do is we're not going to finish Parshas Emor now, because what I'd like to do is, hopefully I will remember, is that next year before Yontif, we'll go back to those psukim which talk about Sukkis, so that will be good for the time. And just, I'll just tell you very quickly, the, as we said, we're only going to be doing certain selections from these parshias, and then we're going to move on next year to Chumash Bamidbar. So this parsha, Parshas Bahar, actually concludes with, I'll just quickly tell you what it concludes, I'm not Bahar, Emor, what it concludes with is the all the Yamim Tovim, and then it goes on to that we have to use the purest of olive oils for the kindling of the menorah, which is interesting. Some commentaries say that's a hint to Chanukah. So even though Chanukah is not from the Torah, but nevertheless, after all the other yontifs, it mentions the idea of the olive oil. Then it talks about the fact that we have the special showbreads on the shulchan, in the Mishkan, you know, on the special on the table over there. And that's what we have on Shabbos. That's like symbolized like the challah that we have, but whatever. Then it goes to a story of a man who was put to death for cursing Hashem. And then the end of Parshas Emor is penalties for committing murder, property damages, and personal injury. Okay, now today, as you can see in front of us, we are starting Parshas Bahar. Parshas Bahar. So if you have a Chumash, you can open up to Parshas Bahar, which is in Chumash Vayikra. It's the second to last Parsha. Many times Parshas Bahar is read together with Parshas Bechukaisai. Parshas Bahar is not a long Parsha. It is often combined with the last Parsha in Chumash Vayikra. But we're going to see something very beautiful, that the beginning of Parshas Bahar discusses a mitzvah which, as we always say, Hashgacha Prat, this is very, very, very applicable for this year. The mitzvah is the mitzvah of Shemitah. And I think of you, Rona. Whenever I look at Shemitah, I think of Rona with the farming, exactly. So there we go. So it is the mitzvah of Shemitah, which we know is, this is what they're having this year in Israel. Now, we will not be doing the halachas of Shemitah. That's its own, you know, I don't know the halachas of Shemitah. We are going to see how Shemitah is given to us in the Chumash, the psukim, and obviously the deeper meaning in the psukim, all the beautiful meaning, all the beautiful lessons that we learn from this incredible, incredible mitzvah. Now, interesting that I say the word incredible, because technically when we think about Shemitah, it doesn't seem like such a relevant mitzvah. For most of us, first of all, we're not farmers. Second of all, we don't even live in Israel. Third of all, nowadays, it's only kept, according to most opinions, midrabanan. It's not even from biblical, because we don't have everybody living in the land of Israel. We don't, all the Jewish people are not there. We don't have the mitzvah of Yovel, which was the next mitzvah, the 50th, the Jubilee year. According to most opinions, Shemitah is only biblical when we are able to keep the Yovel. And that we don't know when Yovel is. Anyway, so it's interesting how I say it's such an important mitzvah, and we'll see from learning about it that it is actually one of the most fundamental mitzvahs as far as what it means, what it represents, and how we, and even us now, can apply it so strongly, and definitely this year, even living in Sydney. So we'll see how it plays out, how it really means so much. So what I want to do is I just want to read you one little paragraph. And then we're going to go into the psukim, which I know is a bit technical, but still that's what we do. We look in the psukim and the rashis, and then we'll see a lot of beautiful depth. The reason I want to read you just one introductory paragraph, just to see, this is a translation from Rav Kook. And remember, Rav Kook was one of the earlier halachic authorities who gave many, many, many verdicts on how the Jewish people should conduct themselves when they finally were able to resettle the land of Israel now in 1948 and afterwards. So therefore, he has many beautiful. So just a beautiful paragraph that he gives us that gives us a little bit of an insight. So he says, it's called, it's his introduction to Shabbos Haaretz, which obviously is the Sefer, which gives us many of the halachas, and he focuses on the spiritual perspective. So I just want to read you one paragraph, and we're going to see many layers later on. So he says that that this mitzvah provides many means of purifying the soul in the halt that is imposed on the usual working conditions during the Shemitah year. That's what happens. There's a halt. It's very interesting. You don't think of Shemitah as a halt, but that's really what it is. As we say, it's like Shabbos. So it's a time that you sort of stop. It's like a pause button. That's what Shemitah is. And he says that the normal pursuit of one's livelihood and business transactions, including paying back debts, are all interrupted at this time in a renunciation of the sacrilege of excessive worry about individual property. It's a very big thing, especially nowadays. People have this thing that, you know, we have what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, and the idea of investing in your own specific property, and that's what gives a person a sense of security. And Shemitah actually removes us from that perspective and makes us realize that our security doesn't come from just owning a specific piece of property. That's not where security comes from. So it's a very big thing. And that's why he says, thus in the seventh year, the supernatural quality of the Jewish soul is allowed to blossom once more. Now we're going to leave that, and we're going to see how that plays out soon in a more extensive way. But now let's just look into the psukim first, so you can see right on page one. It starts on page one, which is, if you have a chumash, you can look in Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25 in Chumash Vayikra, or just on your screen. It's screen shared here. Okay, so it says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, and Hashem spoke to Moshe, Bahar Sinai, on Har Sinai, Lamer saying. It sounds like just a normal pasuk, but it's not. Why? Because we are not in Parshas Yisrael. In Parshas Yisrael, Hashem gave us the Torah, and they were at Har Sinai. Here, we have already been way after, right? Remember, they've had the experience of Har Sinai. They had the three sets of 40 days. They built the Mishkan. This is the end of Chumash Vayikra. Vayikra is about how they're actually bringing the sacrifices in the Mishkan. So where does Har Sinai come here? This is very strange. What are we going back in time? What's happening here? And this is what all the commentaries ask. Why do we mention the Mount Sinai here? Mount Sinai doesn't seem... It could be that Hashem gave Moshe this mitzvah here. That would be in the Mishkan, would make sense. But here it says, no. We're talking about Hashem giving Moshe Rabbeinu the mitzvah of Shemitah, specifically on Mount Sinai, with all its details. And we're going to have to see and explore why we're mentioning Har Sinai here, why Shemitah is connected specifically to Har Sinai, and are we going in order of time? What's happening? So we have to understand. Just let's look at the next pasuk, and then we'll go into the Rashi. So what does Hashem say to Moshe and Har Sinai? Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, v'amarta aleihem, and say to them, ki savayu el ha'aretz, when you come into the land, asher ani noisein lochem, that I give you, v'shof soha aretz Shabbos l'Hashem, and the land shall observe a Shabbos, they translate here, a Shabbos rest for Hashem. It's just a seemingly basic pasuk, but it's so magnificent. Even before we go in, just look at the wording. First of all, you come into the land, asher ani noisein lochem, that I am giving you, that I give you, right? It's present tense. We read the pasuk now. This means that at every moment in our life, we experience Hashem giving us the land of Israel again. That's how we should look at it. That it's a gift that Hashem gives us constantly. So that's the first thing. But that's just a simple thing. Another beautiful thing. Look how he says, what's the seed thing that he's asking us to do? So first he doesn't ask us anything. Who's going to rest? Look what it says. The land. It's interesting. It's almost like it's a mitzvah on the land, which is a funny thing because the land is not a person that can follow a command. So again, what it does is it also gives us such a beautiful perspective about what Eretz Yisrael is. It's so different than any other place. It almost is like a human being. It has a neshama of its own. The land itself has a Shabbos. It's not just the people on the land celebrating Shabbos. The land itself celebrates. It's magnificent. And it is that way. It is wonderful. And you know what? It is that way that when you're in a place like Eretz Yisrael, that's the only place. I think anybody who's ever been there, who's had the fortune of being there, knows that you just feel, there's no comparison to anywhere else in the world. You just feel different. And the land itself has a neshama. And that's what it is. So the land itself has a Shabbos. Now, I just want to do the Rashi here. And what we are going to do is just see the basics of the Rashi. We are going to come back to understanding the Rashi much more in depth after. But we'll do the Rashi, then we'll read the rest of the Pesukim, and then we'll understand. So Rashi says like this. We mentioned, it says Har Sinai, it sounds strange. Obviously, the whole Torah was given on Har Sinai. But why are we stressing Har Sinai when they've moved on from there? They're not near Har Sinai in this context of these parashiyos anymore. In this Chumash Vayikra, they're in the Mishkan. So the Rashi asks like this, Ma inyan Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai? What is the matter of Shmita doing next to Har Sinai? And as he paraphrases the question in the article, why does the Torah say on Mount Sinai, specifically in the context of the laws of Shemitah, as opposed to other laws? I mean, all laws were given at Har Sinai. Why highlighting it here? Now, just to mention, I know we've mentioned this in the past, that this phrase, Ma Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, has become a phrase which I think even Israelis nowadays use for what we would say is what, I forgot the English expression, what does the price of tea, something have to do in China or something like, when you're comparing two things that you think have no connection to each other, right? That's the expression that's used. It's actually quite beautiful from this Rashi. What's the connection? It sounds like you're just taking two things, picking them out of the hat and putting them together. But we have to, we'll just look at the question a little bit deeper soon. But let's understand what he says. So he says like this, why the question? Obviously, the whole Torah is connected to Har Sinai. But that's what he says. V'halei kol ha-mitzvahs nemru mi-Sinai. Weren't all the mitzvahs given at Sinai? Ella. So therefore, why are we highlighting this mitzvah? So he says like this, it's here to teach us, ma-shmita ne'emru klalei seha u'pratei seha v'diktukeha mi-Sinai. Just like we see here that the laws of Shemitah were given both in its general rules and all of the details and the specifics are all given on Har Sinai. And how do we know that? Because the Pasuk says, Behar Sinai, and we'll see in our Pesukim, that we will give all the details of the mitzvah. So we learn from here, Af Kulan, so too with all the mitzvahs, Nemru Klalei Seyen, V'diktukeyen, Misinai, that the general rules and the specifics are all given on Har Sinai, which means many mitzvahs, what we think is that Moshe Rabbeinu got the general mitzvah when he went up on the mountain. I mean, you can't get every detail of every mitzvah on the mountain. And then perhaps later on, either in the Mishkan or even later, before the Jewish people entered the lands of Israel in what we call Arvais Mayav, the plains of Mayav, when Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu much more details, maybe only the general rules were given at Har Sinai and the details were taught afterwards. From here we see that the whole Torah, every detail of it, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Just like the mitzvah of Shemitah, as we will see, general and specific, is given as it says by Har Sinai, so too we learn that all the mitzvahs is the same. Why is that important? Because sometimes we might think that the specifics of a mitzvah, perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't know, derived it himself, or perhaps it's not as, doesn't have the same weight, so to speak. So here we see that the details of the mitzvah were given at Har Sinai directly from Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, so everything carries the same weight. And we have to be very, very careful with the exactness of every detail of every single mitzvah. And that Rashi says where he learns this from. This is taught from a place called Teres Kehanim. V'nireli. And Rashi says, it appears to me. Shekach Prusha, this is the explanation. Lefi shalei matzinu, since we didn't find Shemitah's karkais, shen nishneis ba'arves mayav, later on, in Chumash Devarim, when Hashem repeats many of the mitzvahs to Moshe Rabbeinu, because he gives him a lot of new things, or not new, but he's repeating because they're about to enter the land of Israel, the mitzvah of Shemitah, which interestingly is the one connected to the land, is not repeated there. It's fascinating. So that's how we know. So he says like this. So just like this one wasn't repeated there, what we might think that the mitzvahs that are mentioned before they enter the land of Israel, so to speak, those mitzvahs were only given generally and then detailed at that point. So here we see, no, definitely not. All the mitzvahs were given, both the general and the detail, all at Har Sinai. Some, for some reason, Hashem chose to repeat again to Moshe Rabbeinu to teach them again in the plains of Moab. But they were all definitely taught on Har Sinai. Okay, then he says, let me just see, that's what Rashi says, they were all taught. And then sometimes, as we say, the last line, and they were repeated and reiterated at the plains of Mayav. Now we're going to have to understand a little bit about this Rashi. We'll come back to it. As I say, one of the big questions is, it's all very nice to teach us that just like Shemitah, everything was given at Har Sinai, all the details and the general, and that shows us that every mitzvah had the same treatment. The question is, why choose Shemitah to teach us that? I could think of other mitzvahs that are much more fundamental, perhaps, and that we do much more than Shemitah, to use that as the example that every single detail was given at Har Sinai. So we're going to see soon why Shemitah was used. Let's go to the next one, Shabbos LaHashem. The Pasuk says, what does it mean, Shabbos LaHashem? L'shem Hashem, for the sake of Hashem. K'shem Shenemar b'Shabbos Bereishis, just as it is said, with regard to the Shabbos of creation. Here we see something quite beautiful, that although we know this already and we might have put it together, but the commentary stressed to us that Shemitah is like Shabbos. Okay, so we say, what's the big deal? Of course it's like Shabbos. Shabbos is the seventh day of the week. Shemitah is the seventh year. Shabbos, we rest, right? We don't do certain work. Shemitah, we don't work the land. But there's so many differences. In the year of Shemitah, like now, it doesn't look like Shabbos every day. We're going about our daily business. We can do many, many, even in Israel, right? They do normal work during the week. They can't work the land, but they do all the normal weekday work during the week. Nevertheless, what this shows us is, and we're going to see soon beautifully, that Shemitah is taka different. It's not just the farmer. I mean, I don't mean just. The farmer is the big thing, but it's much deeper than us not working the land. The entire year of Shemitah is a year of Shabbos, and that's what we have to remember. I might not get there today, but I just wanted to share with you that this is this year. Shabbos is a concept of oineg, pleasure. That's what Shabbos is, that we take, Hashem takes pleasure, and we are allowed to interact with the physical things, and it's considered a mitzvah. Like, you know, we say that if you eat excessively during the week, if you make a nice delicacy, well, that's just wasting. But Shabbos, that's it. Shabbos is when we do. We cook the special meat. We save it for Shabbos, and it becomes a mitzvah. The idea is the whole year of Shemitah, that every single thing that we interact with in the world has to be done in a different way, and that applies to everywhere in the world, whether we're in Israel or not in Israel. Shabbos, the year of Shemitah, is, as he says, L'shem Hashem, for the sake of Hashem. We live on a different plane with a whole different perspective, and that's what we're going to develop. Okay, let's go on to the Psukim to see how the Psukim tell us about this mitzvah. So, Sheishanim Tizra Sadecha. So how does it start? It tells us, for 6 years you may sow your field, right? That's when we do all the planting. V'sheishanim tizmar karmecha. For 6 years you may prune your vineyard. And then v'yasafta es tuasa, and you can gather your crops. So this is the 6 years. And then what happens? U'bashana hashvi'is, and on the seventh year, Shabbos Shabbosayim. It's not just a Shabbos, but it's a Shabbos Shabbosayim. Yeh la'aretz, will be for the land. Shabbos la'Hashem, a Shabbos for Hashem. Sodcha loy sizra, right? You don't plant your field. Bekarmecha loy sizmar, and you don't prune your vineyard. So here we see a few of the mitzvahs that you do not prune, you do not plant in that year. Interesting how it started with the positive side of, so to speak, the 6 years, which don't even seem to be a mitzvah. Obviously, you're allowed to work your field in the 6 years. How else are we going to live? And yet, that's how the mitzvah starts, that 6 years you work in the field. So obviously, we'll see soon that it shows us that the working in the field is also a mitzvah. It's actually quite beautiful. It's also part of the mitzvah of Shemitah, and it enables us to do the mitzvah of Shemitah. Let's see the next pasuk. Hey, esviach tzircha loisiktzar, and here they call it the aftergrowth of your harvest. And as Rashi tells us, what is aftergrowth? It doesn't mean aftergrowth. It means things that grow on their own without being planted. So what should you do with that? You shall not reap the es inve nizirecha, and the grapes of your keeping You shall not, what should you not do with them? You shall not siftzar, you shall not pick. Shnas shabasa nyela aretz, it shall be a year of rest for the land. Here we see that when a person has a field, even though he's not planting because it's the year Shemitah, but it's much deeper than that, it's not his. He cannot pick it and reap it and do all the things that he normally does in a normal year, even if things grow on their own. Rather, he has to leave it that anybody else can also come and take it. So he can't just like go outside and collect tons of it and put it in his storehouse and then he's going to enjoy it. Rather, he has to leave it open so that other people can come and take the same way that he takes. That's what a big part of the mitzvah. And we'll discuss that soon. So the resting of the land shall be yours to eat, lecha, for you, but not only for you. Usually it's for you, but now we say, no, 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 it's your land, you own it, but not this year. La'avdecha, for your slave, ula'masecha, to your maidservant, ula'schircha, and for your hired worker. Everybody is welcome in your field the same as you. Quite an interesting thing. Imagine telling somebody in, you know, somewhere else about this, but that's what happens in this year of Shemitah. Ulus soy shavcha hagarim imach, and for those who reside with you. So those are the non-Jewish people who work in the land, who will become your servants. They are also permitted, because a fascinating thing with Shemitah is that, as I said, it's not a halacha shir, but the crops that grow during the year of Shemitah are holy. And there's actually many laws, they should really not be taken out of the land of Israel, but definitely, and they shouldn't be eaten, they should be eaten specifically by the Jewish people or by people who were hired and have a certain type of citizenship in the land of Israel in those years, because they have a very, very great holiness. We cannot waste any of the crops of Shemitah. It's quite a, it's such a complicated thing. I don't know the halacha, like I say, but I remember my sister had a story of quite a few years ago where it was a year of Shemitah. She didn't realize, and she bought the oranges, and they were like the Jaffa oranges, you know, they came from Israel. She brought them home, and she and my father saw, and he said, oh my gosh, you don't know, now you're in big trouble, because you can't even get rid of the peels, and the whole thing, how you get rid of it. She had to let, and she wasn't allowed to eat it, so they had to let it rot in a certain way, and only then, it was a whole process of how you can even, what you can do with it. So it's very, very, very complicated. This fascinating halachas, if somebody buys wine that was grown in the year of Shemitah, and then perhaps you put it on a roast. There's all kinds of interesting things. And are you allowed to throw out any, like, clear, let's say if you had like a child who only ate a half of a piece of the meat and the half is left, what do you do with the leftover? It's very, very complicated. Anyways, but like I said, this is not our halacha here, but it's fascinating. But you see from here that the crops take on an incredible holiness and they have to be eaten. And as he says, ulevem techa v'lachaya asher ba'artecha, for your animal and for the beast that is with you in your land, kol tfu asal la'echol, all that is in your land, all its crop, as you can see, to eat. That's the point. You have to eat it. You cannot waste it. There's no wasting. So there's a lot of beautiful things. Then the next mitzvah goes to Yovel. We're not going to go to Yovel the Jubilee year. Let's come back to understanding these psukim, what's happening. Okay, so as we said at the beginning, we read this Rashi, and I said I want to see a little bit more in depth what this Rashi is. But you know, just before we do the depth of the Rashi, I just want to show you something. I want to see the, of course, we always like to see the Sefer HaChinuch. So I'll tell you, Rona, what page that's on, because it's further down. I have it on a copy, I'll show you. So we have to go to page number, well, let's see. It's, I think, 8. It's on page 8. I numbered them. And then if you look on the on page 8, I bracketed it. It's the last beautiful, beautiful. Okay, so here, this I want to start with, because, I mean, this is unbelievable. This is just beyond. For me, it was so meaningful. This, the Sefer HaChinuch, as we always say, gives us the deeper understanding of the mitzvah. But here, he really gives us the deeper understanding. So here it is in front of you. Mishorshei HaMitzvah. You see it's here. Mishorshei HaMitzvah. In the source, the root of the mitzvah. So I'm just trying to, Okay, so what does he say? He says like this. Likbaya bilibeinu. What's the idea of this mitzvah? So he says to establish in our heart. But that's not enough, not just in our heart. Ulitzayer tzir chazak b'machshavteinu. Amazing language, but very exact. that we should, he says that we should set in our thought a firm conception. In other words, we actually have to almost visualize this. And this means the entire year, all these lessons should be front in our mind. That's what we should, how we, the perspective, the glasses through which we see everything. And what is it? What is it that it's supposed to establish? So he says that what? First of all, there's a few things. Inyan chidush ha'olam, the concept that the world is created. In other words, not that it's a something that, I don't know, that's started from no, who knows where and has sort of that eternity from the beginning. Rather, there is a point at which Hashem actually created the world. As he says, Kisheshes yamim asa Hashem es ha-shamayim v'es ha-aretz, right? 6 days Hashem made the heaven and earth. Uva yoyim ha-shvi, that and on the seventh day, shaloi bara davar, he didn't create anything. What do we know? Hichtiv minucha alatzmai. What is about the seventh day? That's where Hashem writes. That's where he rested. So just like he created the world in 6 days and the seventh day he rested, so too, this mitzvah of Shemitah is supposed to bring that very strongly into our hearts, that remembering, that awareness, but the constant awareness. And he says what? Uleman, and he gives very strong language again. Hasir vila'akar vilishreish. Not just one word, three words. To remove, to uproot, and to literally, how do you say, lishreish is literally to totally eradicate. What does he want to eradicate? Mirayeinenu, from our mind, which means that we shouldn't even have this as any form of perception at all. It shouldn't be in our mind at all. What? Dvar ha-kadmus, the concept of what we call kadmus, which means that the world has a pre-existence. Asher ya'aminu ha-kaifrim ba-Torah, who believes in that? Only those who deny the Torah. Uvayersu kolpinay seha v'yifritzu chaymay seha. What they do is they demolish literally all the corners and they break all the walls. In other words, if you believe that there is no creator and that the world doesn't have any beginning point, well, you can't go further from there. Then you've lost everything already. And he says you have to remove that. But not only in the seventh year, and this is magnificent, ba'achayva aleinu, so therefore, to remove that from us, we have the obligation, lahaitzi kolzmanenu, to actually, as he says, the entire time, to spend our entire time, yoim yoim, every single day, vishana shana, and year after year, al davar zeh, on this matter. How do we remember it all the time? Shemitah is only once in 7 years. Shabbos is once in 7 days. But rather, limnais, sheishanim, because we count the 6 years. And we know that halachically, there are many different halachas that apply to the different ones of the 6 years. I mean, we've mentioned this, different tzedakas that are given. So we are constantly aware when Shemitah is coming. But what does that mean? That we are constantly aware, today is year one, whatever, this year is year one, this year is year two, this year is year three. So we're constantly living with this concept that we lishbais bashvis, that we will rest on the seventh year. So it will never depart from between our eyes. The same way that we have the 6 days of the week, and we know in Hebrew there's no names. Monday doesn't have a name. It's called Yom Sheni because we are counting towards Shabbos. The same thing with the years, counting towards Shemitah. So we're always living with that reality that Hashem created the world in 6 days, seventh day he rested. There's also a concept of 7,000 years. You know that when we say that when the 6,000 years over, Mashiach will come. So it's also a very beautiful concept of this whole way Hashem is constantly creating. But let's see a little bit more, even another layer. And this is even more, each layer gets more and more what I think that we mamish could live with minute by minute. And therefore he says, now, because of this, what does Hashem tell us to do? That we have to declare ownerless anything that the land gives forth in this year, Milvat hashvisaba, besides the fact that we don't work on the land. So there's two parts to it. People think of Shemitah, that the farmers can't do the plowing, can't, you know, plant the seeds. No, it's much deeper. The land literally becomes ownerless. What does that mean and why? Kidei sheyizkara adam, that the person should remember, ki ha'aretz shemaitzia, that the land that actually gave, so to speak, that gave forth Elov HaPeres, the fruits to him, that the land that he got the fruits from, b'chol shana v'shana, every single year, lai b'kaicha uskulasa taitziyaisam, it didn't do it from its own strength, and it didn't do it from your strength, even though you worked hard. That's not how you got the fruits. Rather, kiyesh adayin aleha, rather there is a master, v'al adayineha. So there's a master on the land, and there's a master on the master of the land, meaning on us, who thinks we own the land. Everything is dependent totally on Hashem. U'kashu chafetz hu mitzave elav lafkiram. And when Hashem wants, He can command us to make it ownerless. So that's one big benefit. Again, a fascinating, incredible benefit that we realize, we acknowledge in a real way, that Hashem is the one who created the world, creates the world constantly, and therefore He's the master over the world. He controls, but He can dictate how we should live our life. If He wants it to be owned, it's owned. If He wants it to be ownerless, it's ownerless. If He wants us to plant, we plant. If He wants us not to plant, we don't plant. He's the master. Then the Sefer HaChinuch says another beautiful thing, another benefit. Let me just see where we are over here. Let's see. Okay. That we find in it. Liknais bazeh midas havatranus. And this is a beautiful one. And this is something we can all work on. So there is an attribute that we call to be a vatran. Vatran in Hebrew, there's no real English word, but it means to relinquish. It means somebody, as we say, somebody who's a vatran is somebody who can give in. You know how sometimes when you have a discussion, sometimes it can get very heated, call it a discussion, an argument, and some people have to always be right. Some people, they're just, they're, you know these people, they have to fear us. You know, it's the way they say it and that's it. But Shemitah, interestingly enough, fascinating, teaches us, no. Hold it a second. You can sometimes give in. It doesn't always have to be your way. It's not, you know, that's not the way. It's not, you know, the famous thing, everybody's entitled to my opinion. No, that's not the way it works. Vatranus means to relinquish. But obviously, it's not just relinquish. One thing is relinquishing, in other words, letting another person have his idea. But obviously, it also means relinquishing some things that you own. Physical things, because sometimes people are very possessive. They're possessive of that everything, they control, so to speak, what they think and what everybody else thinks, and they also control what they have and what everybody else has, and they think they can control your things too and tell you how to run your life. No, Shemitah shows us, no, it's ownerless. You don't control anybody. And not only that, but you should ingrain in you this beautiful, beautiful midah. That's actually a very important midah, as we say. Okay, let me just see. He goes on and he says, because then there's a little bit more. So yielding is another word. Yielding and relinquishing. Then he says like this. Just want to see where I am in here. Okay. And then, he says a beautiful thing. Ki ein nadiv kinaisei mibli tikva elagmul. There's nothing like when somebody gives without expecting something in return. That's the way you actually become a real giver. Because interestingly, when somebody gives and they give it and they expect something in return, they're not really a giver. In their giving, they're taking. That's what they're doing. They're just taking in a sophisticated way. But here with Shemitah, because your land becomes totally ownerless, people can come into your field. They'll take what grew, you know, okay, it grew by itself, but truth is you worked this land for 6 years. So, and it's your responsibility ultimately. They take it and you have to allow them to take it, and they are not going to pay you back. They're not borrowing it. They are taking it. So again, it's ingraining in you this idea that you give with no hope of getting back. Not a hope. It's not yours. Now everybody can take. So it's again an incredible thing. Giving without any concept of receiving in return. That's another important lesson of Shemitah. And then he says there's one more beautiful thing. And this is the big one that we know, that's often quoted, the concept of trust. This instills the incredible sense of trust that we have in Hashem. How does it instill trust? It's quite simple, because he says, Kol hamaitzim levavei lasseis ulahafkir la'ilam, kol gidulei karka oisav v'nachle avoisav, anybody who will find it in his heart to make ownerless everything that grows in his field and his inheritance, in other words, his land that he got from his father, his land that he worked on, that he owns, and he's making it ownerless, and he's able to do that, everything that grows that year, b'chol shana achas, that entire year, umilumad b'koch, and he literally becomes used to this, it becomes ingrained in him, v'chol ha-mishpacha kol yamav, not only in him, but it's a family experience. It's very interesting. What will happen is that this person will never, and this is also interesting, it's a very negative midah. The midah of kilos is stinginess, miserliness. This will eradicate that miserliness. You know how some people find it difficult when somebody's there and to share and to be generous? For some people, it's extremely difficult. The mitzvah of Shemitah just makes it easier, because a whole year we watch other people coming and taking what, so to speak, ours. Well, after a year, a person hopefully is sensitized to the fact that there are people who need, and it's not even yours, so to speak. Hashem said you have to give it away. You can't hold it back. After doing it for a whole year, it becomes so much easier, and it's like, in other words, it takes away miserliness and it increases generosity. So it's such it's even from here you see, and as we mentioned, bitachon, because you have to trust in God that He's going to give you what to eat the next year. Otherwise, what are you going to do? Because for a farmer, it's very difficult to allow other people to come and take everything that grows, not to plant, and you know that not planting this year, what's going to be next year, right? That's the problem. This year is one thing you might have in the storehouse from last year, but what about next year? And this is the concept of bitachon. So you see from the Sefer HaChinuch the incredible, incredible benefits. One, just the faith in God, that Hashem created the world in 6 days, but that gives us that, it really deepens that faith, and that Hashem is not only the one who created, but creates the world and controls the world. The concept, as we said, of giving with no sense of receiving, the concept of vatranus, of relinquishing, of yielding, this concept of taking away any sense of miserliness and increasing generosity, and of course, bitachon. So in a nutshell, you can see, maybe already we understand why this is the mitzvah that's used to teach us that all mitzvahs are taught in detail at Har Sinai, because it is such a fundamental mitzvah. Really unbelievable. One more thing before we go in, I want to show you something very beautiful also on the Rashi. The Chassam Sofer says also beautifully, there's something very, very beautiful about this mitzvah. Oh, I'll show you something. I have to read one more pasuk to understand the Chassam Sofer. Let me just see. I want to find the page, and I'll tell you, Rona, what page it's on. I think it's, I hope I made that copy. Oh, let me just see. Sorry. Don't worry, we won't do it all. Oh, beautiful. I don't know if I did. Okay, I'll just read you. I'm sorry, I don't know if I made the copy, but at the end, and we'll see it afterwards, at the end of the Pesukim, after it goes through the year of the 50th year, the year of Jubilee, there's a very beautiful Pesuk that tells us that what will happen is that the Jewish people will say, what are we going to eat, right? They're going to say to Hashem, okay, we'll do the mitzvah, but then what are we going to eat? What's going to happen the next year? And they're worried. That's why he says, V'chi taimar man leichal, if you will say, what will you eat? So that's why Hashem says, V'tziveisi es berchasi, I will command my blessing for 3 years. That's what Hashem says, right? Why 3 years? Okay, that's its own discussion. But the sixth year, the seventh year, and the eighth year. Why? Because the sixth year has to yield enough crop for the sixth, the seventh, and the eighth, as we say. Interesting, because the truth is, in the sixth year, you really eat from the fifth year. So it's an interesting question what the 3 years are referred to, but it doesn't matter. The point is that why is the sixth year need a blessing? Interesting. I saw a beautiful thing. The Kli Yakar says a beautiful thing. He says that because when a person, let's say like with the mon, remember we discussed the mon, when a person gets the mun, falls outside their doorstep. Imagine how beautiful. Instead of having to go to Kohl's, you have the groceries coming to you every day. Fantastic. What could be better? So much pain in the neck to schlep and to... No, everything comes to your door. What's the test? But we say the test is because it's only enough for one day. And we know that if we go to sleep and if our pantry is not full, especially us Jewish women, we don't sleep well. We can't sleep. It doesn't matter if it's Monday. Definitely if it's Thursday, we can't sleep well. If the pantry is not stocked up, we are worried. What's going to be tomorrow? Where are we going to get our food from tomorrow? And this is actually human nature. It says that you cannot compare somebody who has pas besalai, which is the example that's given, bread in his basket, to somebody who has an empty basket, even if their stomach is full. Doesn't matter. As long as the basket is full, you know, as we say, we need extra, then we're calm. That's the test. The test is the trust. So the same thing the Kli Yakar says with the mitzvah of Shemitah. In the sixth year, when they are busy eating all the crops, right, from the fifth year, and they know that after this they're not going to be allowed to plant anymore, so a person starts to get a bit nervous. That's what happens. That's nature, human nature. And when you're eating in the seventh year the crops that you worked so hard on in the sixth year and you're not permitted to replant, you're really extra nervous. And that's why we need the blessing for 3 years, that we should be able to remain calm even in the sixth year when we're eating all that we've planted in the fifth year, but all that we plant in the sixth year, we think, okay, it'll have to do. It'll have to be enough for a very long time. As we say, like now with lockdown, if the store would go and everybody's worried about shortages, don't worry, there'll be enough, Hashem says, I will supply enough. But what does this mean, if we think about it? It means that the crops that they reap in the sixth year, which in addition to it needing to last for an extra 2 years until they're able to replant, and in the eighth year it doesn't grow right away, right? So it has to last a long time. It's after 6 consecutive years of working the land, and we all know that working the land for 6 years, as Rona will tell us, is not such a healthy thing to do. I think I asked you once, how long did you do it? After how many years did you let it rest when you did like the potato? What potatoes, corn, what did you grow?
Yeah, well, we changed the lands.
Oh.
We had potatoes in one land, but next year we planted corn in
it. In that land. And that makes the difference.
That made the difference.
So corn and then potatoes. Yeah. Did you ever leave the land at all like on its own, or was always being planted?
Always
being planted, I guess different crops. So in Eretz Yisrael, they would plant the same crops in the land, and yet after 6 years of consecutive planting, where usually a land is tired, because I think officially after 2 years you're supposed to let it rest, or after three, they still, in the sixth year, it gave extra, which is miraculous, beyond. So the Kli Yakar says a very beautiful thing. He says, that's why, as we're saying here, this is the uniqueness. So now we come back to the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer says like this. He says that what happened over here, I just want to see something beautiful. The Chassam Sofer says, I forgot my train of thought, because we were talking about the special uniqueness. I don't have it inside, but I have it somewhere. Sorry, just give me one second. Oh, sorry, just want to... Oh, and I have it here. Ah, oh, here it is. Sorry. Okay, so the Chassam Sofer explains really, really beautifully. He says like this, that what's special... Oh, that's right, now I remember. We talked about Betochen, right? So he says like this, that if a person is told that, don't worry, you don't have to plant, but Hashem will provide enough. So a person will say, I don't know, if it's Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to us, how do I know that that's true? How do I know that I can actually, literally leave the land, let everybody take what they want, not plant it, and I'll talk, I have what to eat the next year? So from here we see something amazing. This mitzvah was definitely given by Hashem, not by Moshe. He didn't add anything to it, because a human being cannot give that promise. A human being cannot assure us that we will have enough to eat for 3 years. Only Hashem can assure us of that. And that's what shows us again that that's why this mitzvah is used as the mitzvah to show that every mitzvah was given by God. Because this mitzvah can only be given by God. Nobody else would dare. If anybody else dared do that, that would be quite a problem, because they could never assure that we would have what to eat. Okay. Now, just to come back a little bit to understand something else beautiful as we're talking about this Rashi that we mentioned about Har Sinai. So let's understand a little more. This is a very, very beautiful idea. Sorry, Ron, I'm making you crazy with the pages because then I'm going back and forth, but I'll tell you what page. It's going to be page 7. I'll show you. Page 7. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Sorry, everybody. Okay. So I want to show you something beautiful. Now we're going to try to understand, as we said, why specifically use Shemitah as the mitzvah to show us this lesson. And what is the connection specifically between the mitzvah of Shemitah and the mitzvah of Shemitah and Har Sinai? And that's what we want to understand. Okay, let's understand what this mitzvah is. So we say like this. First of all, as we mentioned before, that it doesn't seem to be a very general mitzvah. The mitzvah of Shemitah seems to be a very specific mitzvah because it's only kept in the land of Israel. It's only kept once in 7 years. It's only kept when all the Jewish people live there. There's a lot of things about it. It's only kept if you're a farmer in a way. So why that mitzvah? Okay. So first of all, we have to understand one other thing, as we mentioned when we read the Psukim, and then we're going to go inside to see something beautiful. If you look at the way the Torah sets out the mitzvah of Shemitah, it seems to have an extra pasuk. The Torah says like this, that 6 years you should plant, right? And then the 7th year you don't. Why does the Torah have to tell us 6 years you should plant? The 6 years are voluntary. You don't have to if you don't want to. I mean, hopefully you want to, so you'll have what to eat. Is that a mitzvah? So from there we learn something very important, that the 6 years are also part of the mitzvah. What does that mean they're part of the mitzvah? In two ways. First of all, we say that they are a preparation to the mitzvah. The 6 years that we plant are a preparation for the year of Shemitah. And the other thing is that they are the goal of Shemitah. What does that mean? So let's understand. So I want to show you something beautiful. We'll read, it's here in your, on page number 7. So here it is it's here on the screen. So this is taken from a Sicha, so this is in Yiddish. Yeah, okay. Der Inyan von Shemitah. So let's understand, what is the idea of Shemitah? So here we'll see another beautiful insight. As Bishona Hashvi, Starv Zain. Oh, I have to, I'm sorry, just make this smaller so I can see it. Okay. Shona Hashvi is, so the 7th year, Starv Zain Shabbos Zain La'aret has to be a rest for the land. Sod Chalai Sizra, Vakarma Chalai Sizma, right? You don't work, you don't plant, you don't prune, as we say. And then Bishona Hashvi is, Starv Zain Shabbos Zain in the 7th year should be a rest. In the Ale in Yonim fun Melachai Saaretz, what do we rest from? All the things like of the working of the land, fun Vas min Macht Lahem, what we make. Sha'alav Yichya Ha'adam, and those are the things that we live on. So we have to rest from doing the things that we depend on for life. And then we know V'chisayim Rumanaychal, we might ask, what are we going to eat? We get scared. Oivdem Enferti Torah, so on this the Torah answers, Vitzivisias Berchasi, that I will command my blessing, Va'asasa Esatvua, L'shalei Shashanim, that the land will yield enough for 3 years. What's the idea? So we say, Menmont Baya Idn, the demand. What is Shemitah? What is the mitzvah? We demand from a Jew, as Ein Mol in Zibin Yar, once in 7 years, Zoller Zich Gezegenin, von alle in yonim artsim, he should part. You know, you say gezegne, like you say goodbye. Literally, goodbye to the land. You split, you make a little bit of a separation between you and all the physical thing. Erdische bader finishin, all the physical needs. Erzol nithaben zuton mit melachas aretz, you shouldn't have to do with the working of the land. Vazayne farbundin medem, lechem sh'olav yichya adam, which actually represents almost all the physical needs of a person. And what should you do? And you should totally rely on Hashem, as ervetim gebin zayin parnasa lemaila mehateva. Hashem will give you your parnasa in a way which is higher than nature. This is not a simple thing. Only a Jew can do such a thing. This is crazy. It is crazy when you think about it. To literally say goodbye to the land for a whole year and say, somehow the money will come. From where? Miraculously. He says, as we know, that's not the way we're supposed to live always. Definitely not. A Jew has to live responsibly. We live in this world. That's what Hashem said. Reif azman, most of the time, bekamas, at least in quantity. Darfa id, habin sutan mit in yonia ilam. A Jew has to deal with things of this world, right? We do, because that's what Hashem said. And not only that, but that's the most important thing, to live avodas habirurim, because we're meant to be in this world, and we're meant to live as a Jew in this world, as we know, not separate. And then we elevate and we refine the world. We bring light into the world. Thus is there in Yinvas Hisavas Ha'olam is given Durchan Shem Elekim Bigamatria HaTeva. We know how Hashem created the world, we say, with the name Elekim, which is nature. That's how, and it's the same gematria, because Hashem created the world that it should run in a natural order. Plant, then you have what to eat, you go to work, you get a paycheck, otherwise you don't have what to eat. B'chtei dem adam zozich isik zan al pi teira, that a Jew should involve himself according to Torah in the inyanim funteva, in nature. Und durch dem mevarerum zachich zan di inyanim ha'teva, and through this, you actually refine nature. What this means is that when we do the work, and we know that even putting Shemitah aside, the farmers in the land of Israel have it much harder than everywhere else. Remember, we mentioned they have to leave the corners, and you have to, and you, let's say when you're collecting, and imagine if you're collecting the corn and one would drop and you have to leave it there. It's so much harder. But that means that all through the 6 years, the normal years, you're also living according to the guidelines of Torah. And then what happens is if you do that, then you could keep the year of Shemitah. Because a person who trains themselves to live 6 years with Hashem's guidance, then the seventh year you can also live with Hashem's guidance. But if you forget about Hashem for the 6 years, it's not going to automatically happen in the seventh year, as we know. It doesn't work like that. It's not a magic turn on. So that's why the pasuk says 6 years you should work your land. Because the 6 years you have to work it the way Hashem says. And then the seventh year, you can also do what Hashem says. You stop. Exactly. How do you have the strength to work the land 6 years the way Hashem says? Because you stopped the seventh year. As we know, how do we have the strength to go through the week? Only because of Shabbos. We always say, now we missed it. We missed Shul so much. It gives us that energy. It makes the whole week different. You have Shabbos, the week is different. You don't have Shabbos, oy vey, the week is very, very different, and not the way it should be different. And this is the same idea. So, as we can see, the 6 years both prepare for Shemitah by living with Hashem during those 6 years, and they are the result of Shemitah. By actually getting the inspiration through the year of Shemitah, we come back into the land and we can work it properly. Now we come to a very interesting thing. I just want to show you something beautiful. Time is already moving quickly. And we explained that this mitzvah is, as we said, a very general mitzvah. Why? So one of the things, as we mentioned already, all these beautiful things that we have from it, but even deeper. We say, what is it about Shemitah that makes it what we call a mitzvah klal? So still on page 7, we say, das is der teichen, it's on the second column, von alle mitzvahs. This is the content of all mitzvahs. What does it mean? The Alter Rebbe declared in Tanya, as der esek in teire mitzvahs und tefillah, is an inyan von mesiras nefesh mamish. When we do teire and mitzvahs and davening, it's really total mesiras nefesh. Mesiras nefesh means that we literally are like giving up our life, so to speak, just God. Only God exists. Like we know, when you daven, you're supposed to concentrate. When you do a mitzvah, you're supposed to be involved totally in the mitzvah. And the example here, that's good, quite a strong language, he says, kimoi betseisa min hagof. It's like, literally, as if the neshama left the body, which means that you don't think about your mundane things. You don't think about all the things you're supposed to be doing and wanting to be doing. Rather, you think about doing the mitzvah properly, as we say. If you don't worry about all the needs of the body, rather you devote your mind to the Torah, to the tefillah. That's what real mitzvah is. As we say, as b'shas esek ha'tayra u'mitzvah u'tefillah, dar zayin der hergish, punkt, v'yeris shoyin noch, yitzias ha'nefesh me'aguf. It's actually a very strong language that it's almost like when you do a mitzvah, it should be almost as if your body doesn't exist anymore. It's almost like your neshama is already in Gan Eden because you're one with Hashem. That's what happens when you do a mitzvah. In a mitzvah, there's only you and Hashem. And that's the feeling that should be. Eilecha Hashem nafshi esa, right? That to you, Hashem, my soul has been lifted from that tzveiter zayit. But at the same time, it's interesting, so you remove yourself, but at the same time, we know that we have to do a mitzvah with all the exact details of the mitzvah, which means at the right time, in the right place. So a mitzvah is a funny thing. On the one hand, we remove ourselves from the world. On the other hand, we have to take into account all the details. Is it because you can't keep Shabbos on Wednesday? That wouldn't be keeping Shabbos. So in other words, we have to be very in the world, right? We have to know exactly and we have to do everything properly. So it's a very interesting combination. It's an opposite thing together. To do a mitzvah, we have to have two opposite forces working together. On the one hand, being divorced from the world. On the other hand, being properly in the world. It's not a simple thing. How can a Jew do that? And that's what the mitzvah Shmita teaches us. Because what does it say? Har Sinai. Where do we get the mitzvah Shmita? Har Sinai. What does Har Sinai teach us? And I'm going a bit quickly because I want to at least finish this concept. There's so many beautiful things I want to do next week, more. But Har Sinai shows us that. What's Har Sinai? So we know the famous Medrash that what happens when the Jewish people, when Hashem wanted to give the Torah on Har Sinai, all the mountains, right? They all came and they said, please give it on me, right? But Hashem didn't choose them. Hashem chose rather Har Sinai. Why? Because we say that Har Sinai wasn't arrogant. That's the famous Medrash. What was Har Sinai? Har Sinai was a small mountain compared to all the other big, beautiful mountains. But the question is, if Hashem wanted a small mountain to teach us humility, he should have given the Torah the famous question, in a valley, why give it on a mountain at all? Because this is a very interesting thing. Hashem does want a mountain, but he wants a small mountain. This is the hard thing. As we say, as a Jew, it's always this opposite things. We are mountains. We have to know we are special. We have to know we are unique. We have to know, just like a mountain is powerful, that's when you look at a mountain, it's scary. We have to know that we do have strengths. Obviously, our strength comes from Hashem. But we have to be the smallest mountain. So not a valley. In other words, not like everybody can just step all over us. We have to have an inner strength. And yet, it has to be together with humility. This is such a difficult combination. It's much easier to just be humble and not to have that strength. But that's not good enough. And this is what Torah and Mitzvah is all about. That combination of opposites. Being in the world and out of the world at the same time. Arrogant, not arrogant, that's not the right word. Being confident and yet humble. That's what a Jew is. Why? Because as we say, and we say it every day, it's interesting, when we wake up in the morning, a person has to be, as says, gibor ka'ari, strong as a lion, and bold as a leopard, which means that we shouldn't worry about what other people say. As a Jew, we walk with our head high. We know we're doing the right thing because we're following what the Torah says. Where do we get that strength from? Because we know, like Har Sinai, we are a mountain. But we're a small mountain because we know we get it all from Hashem. So we're not arrogant, but we're confident. And this is what the mitzvah, that's why it says it's given on Har Sinai, because that's the only way we could do this mitzvah. The only way that we can actually, as we say, live in this world and yet with a total trust in Hashem is this combination of opposites. Har and Sinai. Mountain, but small mountain. And that's what's expected from us as Jews. It's a very difficult combination. I want to, let me just see if I can take away the share. Here, so I can see people maybe. Oh, here we are. Anyways, so I'm going to stop here and we will continue next week because there's a lot more details and we're going to see more all the different Rashis and a lot of the beautiful Mefarshim. Okay, I see, Chana. Yes, the Yiddish is beautiful, but let me just see. And next week we'll see another beautiful one. I just want to see if I can, if you have any questions. Let me just see if I can make that you can unmute. Let me see something. Okay, I think you can unmute yourself if you want to. I think so. Hope so. Yes. Reva, I can't hear you. I don't know. Maybe it's my thing is not. Let me see something. If my speaker. Oh, now I can hear. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. If there are any questions.
Thank you, Gina. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Any. Shavua Tov, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.